Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome, everybody. Dog days of summer, it seems like, even though it's just barely begun.
Speaking of dogs.
Dog days of summer, we got Michael Berry coming. I'm up at late in the show, we got Michael Tao up now.
Right.
It's Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up, brought to you by
AmericasCitizenPress.com, a great conservative website, and Cinegenics in Denver, Dr. Julie McKellen. Hey, want to let everybody know we are back on YouTube, at least for right now. Maybe
we'll get thrown off again.
Well, yeah, maybe after we talk to Michael. But you can always, eventually you can get all of the shows at chuckandjulie.com because I put them up on Rumble when YouTube bans us too. So let's just jump right into it. Michael, when we last talked to you, you had a great column up about sort of the truth. What they're not telling us is how, as I was promoting it, about vaccines. But we started getting into, and then we ran out of time, and that's why I wanted to come back. And what you exactly think is going on with all of this. Dr. Fauci, of course, today is telling us now that if we don't believe him and his flip-flops, then we still are not following the science.
No,
and we
to believe Fauci is to believe science and truth.
Whether
yes, exactly.
Right. Whatever he says.
And at whatever time he says it, right. You have to keep up with him.
Right. It's very complicated. But what do you think is going on here?
Well, I mean, definitely his claim about being the standard bearer of science, that's all, sorry, I lost the thing. That's all not total nonsense. Somehow lost the,
moving dogs.
But I can do it like this. But there it is. Ah, there we go. So yeah, certainly, I mean, that's preposterous, egomaniacal nonsense. People are gonna believe it, though. A lot of people didn't get the lesson at the end of The Wizard of Oz when the Scarecrow gets his brains by getting a diploma. They think the Scarecrow really got smart because he got I think people are going to have trouble digesting this news. Some people may not like it. So nobody loathes Anthony Fauci more than I do. Way back in the end of March in 2020, I wrote maybe one of the first columns just blasting him as a complete malignant charlatan. So I think I have a good pedigree there. But the story about the Wuhan lab, believe it or not, it's designed to get him off the hook, and it's designed to get the Communist Chinese Party rulers off the hook. So we could start with, everybody probably heard that story that a Chinese lab in the middle of January 2020 released the genome sequence for the virus. And then the Chinese authorities closed down the lab, right? Everybody probably is aware of that story. You know where that story came from? That story came from an outlet called the South China Morning Post. It was published 7 weeks after the alleged events were supposed to have happened. The South China Morning Post is owned by Alibaba. Alibaba is a Chinese company heavily involved with the government. So essentially, the place you're getting the story about the Chinese lab getting shut down for releasing the virus is from the Communist Party China, even themselves. That's where it's coming from. It's coming from a source that one of the businesses they're heavily involved with owns. The idea that they tried to cover up the virus is blatantly false. On January 1st, 2020, when there were less than 30 cases and no deaths, they published something in their the official Communist Party English language media, it was for us, trying to make it sound like the Andromeda strain was already coming. That was January 1st. The South China Morning Post also helped them with that. 3 days later, they wrote this alarming report to WHO saying there's now 40 cases, still no deaths. Even WHO said, okay, well, it's the middle of winter, so 40 cases of viral pneumonia is really maybe not something to be concerned about. The symptoms are common. Even WHO had to say that in their report. So what's happening here is one other fact. it's been established repeatedly that assuming the Chinese, everything we know about the virus came from China, right? Yeah. Assuming that they're not just lying and it actually exists, and that the PCR tests, at least the test for it, at least pick out something unique for it. Assuming that that little bit is true, if that's not true, the whole outbreak is garbage anyway, it never happened. But if that little bit is true, it's been repeatedly established that the virus was already completely spreading in Europe and the United States in 2019, right? So they took sewage samples in Brazil and Italy that were taken in 2019. They found it in some as far back as March, I think. I'd have to look at the research again. But all the samples they found from 2019 were loaded with this thing that they're this piece of RNA that they're testing us for that's supposed to be unique to the virus, right? And it was the sewage samples were loaded with it. One study says it's the same amount we found when the outbreak was supposed to be at its
peak. But I'm a little lost. So there never was a virus?
Well, no.
If there was an outbreak, it happened before we were terrified by it, and nobody noticed.
So let me clarify.
That's the thing. Nobody. Another fact. According to the CDC's research and every other research that's been conducted, this virus does not harm human cells under laboratory conditions. Now, you might think maybe that's not uncommon. That's very uncommon. I looked and looked and looked and looked. I found 20 different viruses that are supposed to harm humans. Every single one of them harms human cells in laboratory conditions. Only one other one doesn't. SARS-CoV-1, another virus that we only believe is deadly because of the Chinese. And in their articles hyping COVID before it was even when there were less than 30 cases and no deaths, they compare it to SARS-CoV-1. Oh, it may be like SARS from 2003. You know how many cases of SARS there were in 2003? 8,000 in the entire world.
I'm lost. What is the conspiracy, or what are the people doing that they think that it's a great idea to blame the Chinese communists and the Wuhan lab when in fact it's who, what, and
if
where?
If you blame them for the virus coming from a lab, you're sucked into believing it's deadly. You have nothing to blame Fauci for. So whether it came from a lab, so yeah, maybe, I'm not saying it's false. Maybe they constructed a harmless virus to run their hoax in a lab and released it. Maybe they didn't. It's like I say to you, oh, my Aunt Mary is in the hospital and I need $10,000 to save her life. Can you give it to me? You give it to me. And you find out there's nobody in the hospital I even know. And then you're obsessing about whether I really have an Aunt Mary. It doesn't really matter. Okay.
So let me help. Let me put you on pause then and explain. Hang on a second. Let me just, because I want to point out a bunch of stuff to people here. Number one, you were one of the first people. If you're listening to Michael and you're like, I'm just going to say you were one of the first people we talked to who said the Russia hoax, there was never any hack of the DNC. All of that was manufactured. Turned out you were 1,000,000% correct in that. So what you're saying here is that somebody, the Chinese, clearly have manufactured essentially the panic porn surrounding a virus and all of the negative consequences that came afterwards.
Cut down U.S.
And worse than that, anybody who's familiar with the volume of research showing the negative effects isolation and stress have on the immune system knew, and that includes Fauci, Redshield, and the Chinese, knew that lockdowns were going to cause a lot of old people to die. Anybody, by locking them in a space with no air coming in, closing all the windows, and scaring the living daylights out of them, depriving them of human companionship. So they found there was like 20 or 30 years ago, they were allowed to give college students the flu and actually run tests that were stuff they can't do anymore. They found that that loneliness and ice and stress were like this huge factor in whether flu vaccines actually suppress symptoms at all, right?
But that's
like
one of the main. I'm sorry.
They knew. So all these people were killed by lockdowns, and they.
Okay, so they figured, okay, let's kill Western economies
and people,
but the old people. So really, in a fascist sense, you're getting rid of the worthless mouths. But let's cause them to close their economies and destroy themselves and get rid of Trump while pretending this average standard yearly flu that this year we called COVID-19 was somehow unbelievably deadly, and the fools will do it.
Yeah, and it wasn't even, it was in April. No respiratory viruses, that's another thing. They don't start suddenly spreading in April for well-known reasons. So Dennis Rancourt, a researcher who's looked through all this stuff, who's banned all over the place for doing it, he's, since World War II, no respiratory virus has ever spread in April. It's never happened before. So, and it doesn't happen for well-defined reasons. It's about humidity. That's why they spread in the winter. Once the humidity climbs to a certain level, they can't spread anymore. So there was no outbreak. Any outbreak of SARS-CoV-2 happened months earlier. That's been established.
Was the Democratic Party in on it from the beginning?
I don't know. So there's, once you start this ungodly scheme, a lot of people benefit in a lot of ways. That makes, so Facebook and Google, were they in on the beginning? I don't know. Or did they just realize, if we push this, we close down everybody's business and their church, and they can't go anywhere, and they have to spend more time on Facebook and Google?
Right. Well, here's what Charlene is saying.
Did he push this just to be on TV, or was he complicit? I think there was some complicity because of the timing of certain things, but it's,
well, and Charlene is saying, let me ask you this, Michael. So Charlene is saying fear controls the masses and the virus equals fear. So the virus is a fear tool to control the masses. That might be, so China just wants to destroy everything, destroy our economies. But if you're Fauci, if you're the Democrats, if you want to have elections changed, if you want to do all the things that they did, if you're, you know, Amazon and you want to crush small businesses, then they have they use the fear to control us. And so whether they were complicit,
so you hate Fauci, I hate Fauci more than any of you, believe me, I would gladly pull the thing while he's on the gallows. Like, I would pay, because that's what he deserves. And I would pay to be the person who pulls the lever to drop the floor out from under him when it happens. Like, nobody despises him more than I do. But when you start taking the bait and saying, yeah, he released the virus, you then have to start telling yourself the virus was deadly. You have no choice, or you got nothing to blame him for. And mark my words, I warn people. So when all these Democratic operatives came forward and started accusing Andrew Cuomo of essentially making passes at them, and the media suddenly started hyping it, I warned everybody, you're being distracted from the nursing home scandal. The nursing home scandal will engulf, if they don't distract you, it's going to engulf three other governors. And we're going to find out that a huge proportion of the death toll was caused by the measures that were supposed to save us from it. Everybody was like, you're on Andrew Cuomo's side. You're da 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 da. Now it's not true. What happened? Nothing came of those allegations. I mark my words, seriously.
Yeah.
Pushing the Wuhan line. No one is going to be punished for this. It's going to keep going until people are distracted from the fact that there was no deadly virus release. And then what people need to think, why is Facebook suddenly not censoring stuff about the Wuhan lab? Do you think it's because they want you to know the truth? You really think they're sitting there? When your enemies tell you something you don't want to hear, sure, be suspicious. But what conservatives, it blows my mind, they listen to their enemies tell them stuff they do want to hear. Like, oh my God, that's 1,000 times more, something really bad.
Yeah, insidious.
When your enemies start flattering your prejudices.
Well, why did Fauci, let me ask you this. Why did Fauci, I mean, I have a good friend who's just about as bright and crazy as you are. And
maybe he is bright, but not as crazy.
Well, no, he's as crazy. and he's been going wild about the fact that COVID is easily curable with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine.
I don't even, what's being cured? There's no reason to think it's COVID. The tests.
Well, whatever it is, they're curing it. They can.
Yeah, whatever, that's true. Whatever, yeah, that's what should be said.
Whatever they're curing it. And even today, I mean, we have a former co-host friend, Stephen Tubbs, who got whatever COVID is and so forth. And they took him to the emergency room. And of course, they gave him nothing. Because
but they put him on a ventilator.
They put him on a ventilator and tried to kill
That's
him.
Another thing. They killed people with that.
Yeah. Well, and so this is another one from Charlene. So the virus, and she's got a good point, and she's with what you say, Michael, the virus doesn't even have to be deadly to instill fear into control. It just has to be hyped up as deadly, which is what you're
exactly,
saying.
Yeah, exactly, Charlene. And they would, from the beginning, so the whole, so you, people know about Li Wenliang, the heroic ophthalmologist who blew the whistle on COVID-19 and tragically died of it. So you know where that story was first published? In one of the Chinese Communist Party's oldest media outlets called Beijing Youth Daily. That's where that story. They did an interview with him, allegedly while he's on his deathbed. So also the CCP let him have internet on his deathbed while he was dying from COVID. They didn't have any problem. And then instead of like when the CCP found out the interview was published, instead of just taking it down and like brutally punishing these people, they sent him a polite note telling him to take it down. And what do you know? It managed to get archived. Weren't the CCP unlucky about that? Then CNN and everybody starts reporting this. This is the thing. Everything you know is coming from the CCP, and especially all this stuff about them trying to cover it up. There was no Li Wenliang. The story is preposterous. There's pictures of him. It says he's intubated in the interview, and he's got to be on death door. He did an interview. You can Google translate it. It's so grammatical that it comes out in long English sentences that are perfect. 1,200 words while he was intubated in a hospital bed. And the pictures show a healthy guy who isn't intubated, who has a breathing mask that can be taken on and off in a second that everybody showed. There was no, and there another thing. He allegedly was reprimanded by the authorities on January 3rd, which is 3 days after they published an article hyping the virus in their English language media, 4 days after Wuhan authorities issued a report, the same day they sent a dire report to the World Health Organization. But he supposedly was reprimanded on January 3rd because of some texts he sent out that got screenshot and they went viral on the 27th, according to the Communist Party newspaper. I did a web search for those the screenshots of those texts. The first day they come up is the very day that Chinese Communist rag published the article on Li Wen. That's the first time I could find any of these texts. So there was never any. You remember those videos of people dropping dead? Those were
right.
Was that a cover up? Were they trying to cover up the virus? People, I'm sorry to say this, but they're just like, things are coming in and they're just accepting them and they're never taking a step back and like using the brain that God gave them to think about it for 2 seconds. Were those videos as preposterous? Oh, the children wrapped in plastic. I remember those videos. Was that the Chinese trying to cover up the virus? Are they really that bad at covering things up that they put out videos?
So you're saying you think that this whole new kind of thing about that it might have been the lab leak and all of a sudden now we're not being censored for saying that hopefully anymore is once again to distract from the fact that the whole thing, kind of like the Russia hoax, was essentially manufactured and designed to basically destroy the American economy. And then
this is a general feature I call these secondary entrapment narratives. Okay. There's always, so people think, conservatives think I'm smart. I don't buy the media hoaxes. These hoaxes aren't meant for you, and you're buying the ones that are meant for you. Do you think the media is stupid and they're not making hoaxes that appeal to your prejudices as well, to red prejudice as well as blue prejudice? So take the Russian hack. There was another narrative. The Russians didn't help. It's usually the secondary narratives are dumber than the ones that Democrats believe. This is the thing. The Russians didn't help Trump. They framed themselves to help Clinton. So Putin framed himself and got sanctioned to help Clinton. So I call you and I say, I'm thinking of killing somebody. Would you frame yourself for the crime? It would be a real help. Are you going to say yes? You're going to say no. That story, there's nothing to it. There was the Russians did not interfere in any significant way with the
Russians. Had nothing to do with any of it.
But they got people not to see that the whole thing was BS with a red narrative and a blue narrative. It's the same thing here. The primary blue narrative is this virus came from bats to humans and it was a horrible thing and it almost wiped us out, but lockdowns saved us. The primary red narrative is no, those evil Chinese, they released the virus that killed us. But there was no virus that killed us. That's what they stop you from doing because I feel it too. You salivate, you want us, you know something's wrong with what the Chinese and Fauci did and you grab onto this. But you don't realize it's blocking what's really wrong. I think the other thing here that needs to be said is we are all guilty for letting lockdowns happen, all of us, for not like stopping this atrocity. And the Wuhan lab narrative allows us not to look in the mirror about our own guilt for letting our old people, old nursing homes, be literally turned into death camps. People need to look at the videos of these old people like banging on the windows. There was an article in American Greatness by a woman whose mother was in one, where she says, yeah, she couldn't visit and look through the window because the attendants told her when that happened, the inmates tried to break out and escape.
Well, you know, no, it is tragic. My aunt died in the middle of all of this, right? And so they had such bizarre rules that my one cousin could go, but they could only have one person. I mean, so basically my aunt's son, because they had to give a list of the people who could visit the first day with three people on it for no reason. Okay. And so he was, yeah. And so then the bottom line was he was not allowed to see his mother. She was not allowed to see him. And just like you said, she got so upset when she spoke to him on the phone that they were like, well, because she was like, why isn't he here?
And you should get Reiner Fulmich on your show. You should. So he's got a video banned by YouTube. So he's a German American trial lawyer. He's like, he's a left wing. And a lot of the people fighting this are on the left. That's another thing people have to accept, right? So he's a left wing, huge trial lawyer. He's trying to get at him from, he wants everyone to, he calls it the greatest crime against humanity in history. Lockdowns, millions, I don't know if it's billions, but third world people like starving, put into poverty, like by these lockdowns, right? And because we didn't affect us, we didn't even care about our fellow citizens who were screwed over by it. But he's got a video, Crimes Against Humanity, where he says, greatest crime against humanity in history. And he's trying to get people to lawyers all around the world to file civil suits because lockdowns were based on PCR testing. That's where, and he, as he says, we didn't have a COVID-19 pandemic. We had a fake PCR testing pandemic. But yeah, you should try to get him. He's like really articulate about this and he's like livid. He's like, this is one of the greatest atrocities ever.
Right.
And you're not going to see that if you think it was the virus. And again, I'm not saying maybe they did.
Maybe there was a virus, but that's the mystery. It wasn't that. Well, here's Leo.
After we've got Nuremberg trials running, right? And we got Fauci and all the masters of public health people who were pushing this stuff in the dock with them. And we're approaching the speedy trials to get these people hung. Dan, it's interesting. Let's find out. Was the virus created or not? But until that point, like, no, it's a distraction. The labs that need to be investigated is the lab that the Chinese communists told us they shut down. Like, why? This is the thing. All the information is coming from them. The lab that they claim they shut down, which identified the virus, which they did no such thing. If you read what they did, I can't even get into like how preposterous it is. 24, two dozen extremely serious scientists, including the ex-vice president in charge of all research at Pfizer, wrote an article pointing out that the PCR test article validating it is so full of fraudulent science, it's point by point, that they demanded it be retracted. Mike Yadin, he's been one of the most censored guys out there because he said, ex-vice president at Pfizer, he said, I can't understand what they're doing with this vaccine. There's no need for it. As far as I'm concerned, it's possible that they're trying to depopulate is the polite word.
Well, and here's the thing too. And again,
ex-vice president of research at Pfizer said that's possible. It's so bizarre the way they're pushing these experimental vaccines that haven't been adequately tested on us for no reason.
Right. Well, and then you have that Cleveland study that says if you have this, but I think again, as you keep saying, and you've got, you know, Leo is pointing out the CCP had a 24/7 webcam showing an emergency hospital being built.
Thank you, Leo. I wish I could buy you a drink. Yes.
Talk about covering up. And then Charlene says, excellent point, Michael. All these videos released by China, just the way of covering up the virus, but didn't they tell us they were leaked? And I think maybe that's a good point, because I imagine in the United States, we're used to, particularly in the Trump era, of things being leaked to make you look bad. But I suspect things don't get leaked in China. Why would
you? Not an official Chinese Communist Party media. Right, anyway, right. Definitely not. Where all this stuff is coming from. It's all coming from there. And if you go to that South China Morning Post article that claims that they shut down the lab, which 7 weeks later was published, that's not official Chinese Communist Party meaning, but it's owned by a company that's basically owned by the Chinese Communist Party. You can tell it's BS. It's an anonymously sourced. There's no information.
What's
careful not to accuse them of anything?
Well, they've been so successful this. They got rid of Trump. They destroyed the economies. They killed a lot of people. They killed a lot of old people. So what have they got?
People they intubated. That's nothing. So breathing tubes everyone, the medical authority knew this. Like, a lot of doctors need to be hung too, right? That you only put breathing tubes on people as a last resort because they seldom come out of it alive. The reason we use breathing tubes, there's a journalist named Jordan Schlachtel, excellent journalist. He has this article that should have won a Pulitzer detailing it all. The reason we, and we killed a lot of people in the beginning by putting moderately, people with moderate respiratory virus.
Who would have recovered,
The only reason we did that, he documented, is the Chinese told us to. They intentionally killed your fellow citizens with medical malpractice to create a bomb. And then all these deaths were blamed on the virus in the most heinous aspect.
And then anybody who raised any questions, like you said, was, you know, banned. We were banned from YouTube for suggesting that kids under 12 don't have to wear a mask. And 2 days later, the state health department said, yeah, kids under 12 don't have to wear a mask. It's like, what
and we put up with, I mean, like, a lot of this is, it's hard to know how this is. There's no reforming this system from the inside. The federal government is a corrupt, totalitarian entity crushing us. That's what that's what they are. So I can die. I almost wrote an article. I just didn't have time. Like, 10 times health authorities blatantly lied about COVID-19. Nobody even thinks they should be punished anymore. You're like, so in Kansas, they put a graph out saying, look, masks work. Well, one thing they did is they put them on the no mask and the mask counties on different axes. So when you put them on the same axis, they didn't work that well. The second thing they did was they cut out the part where in the mask counties, it went way up before it went down, right? So you look at the real data. If you were going to draw any conclusions, it would be masks make it worse. That would be the only conclusion you could draw. Kansas health authorities blatantly misrepresented that.
Yes.
Nobody's fired. Nobody's going to try. I have Fauci's lied on video. He lied in front of Congress. Like, it's blatant because he said the exact opposite 11 days earlier. It's blatant that, that COVID is 10 times more deadly than the flu. That's what he said to Congress. 11 days earlier, he told his peers it's likely exactly as deadly as the flu.
I hate to say this, Michael, but you're starting to make a little sense.
Nobody can. You got to think how bad it is. It's like we're used to it. Every day it's like, oh, yeah, they lied about it. And the other problem is we're trained. We've been trained to look at this as kind of entertainment. It's the whole culture for the first time in history revolves around people get, it's like, you know, you read War and Peace. They're not sitting around watching a television at night. One guy's playing the piano and a woman's writing a sonnet. Somebody's singing. They're playing card games. The kids are running around playing their own games. But we've been trained to sit around and wait to be entertained. That's our highest value. And I come to realize recently, a lot of the problem is because of that, we start to look at everything through that lens. So yes, it's entertaining to watch people expose, listen to people expose these lies. It's entertaining to hear Trump call them out, but it accomplishes like nothing if we're not outraged and don't do anything about it. We just go, well, I got a good buzz out of hearing that lie.
No, I'll never do it again. Really, once again, we have run out of time. So we have to,
it got late. Yeah.
I know. Well, it always does with you because like Chuck says, it's just like after the Russian hug, we got off the show and we're like, wait a minute, let me do some research here. And I was like, whoa.
I'm not saying it didn't come from a lab. I'm just saying like,
that's not the
totally
point.
Miss. If you buy that and start focusing on it, even if you yourself, which would be very difficult to say, but I realize it wasn't deadly because then why are you hyping this lab business? It wasn't even deadly. But even if you manage to do that, you're sending the vibe out there that the virus is deadly. You're creating that narrative on the red side. The blue side, it's like they'll believe any. The media knows the blue side will believe anything they say, no matter how preposterous it is. But they also know that we can be distracted by being thrown an occasional bone. Anytime they're suddenly telling you something you want to hear, when you need to hide the silverware. That's when you need to be going like, whoa.
Before
I get emotionally invested in this, I need to find out why they want to get me emotionally invested.
Michael, you're great.
You're great.
That's
American
conditioning.
Yes. See you guys. Thank you,
sir. All right.
Thank you, Leo, Michael too, and the woman whose name I can't remember.
Charlene,
thank you. Charlene. You guys were helping.
All right. And you guys, whose column is up there on the vaccine at revolvernews.com. And Charlene, real quickly, Charlene was asking, were actors pretending they were leaking videos? The Chinese doctors afraid that we would be arrested if they were caught. That was all a simulation. Charlene, I've had conversations with Michael. I think he would suggest that, I don't know if they were actors, but that some of it-
They're all shot afterwards.
Yeah, some of it doesn't even really exist. that, I mean, that it was just, it was manufactured. So I guess actors, and that some of it, when you try to track some of these doctors that were being talked about, you don't actually find them anywhere. So we're moving on now because we're going to talk about more fun stuff.
Find out what the government is now doing to you with inflation. Yes, the evil cabal we call the U.S. government.
We are pleased once again to have Professor David Beery from Virginia Tech Economics Professor. David, are you there with us? There you are. Hey, thank you for your time once again today. Appreciate it.
Sure. It's very good to be back on the show. It's the summer now, and I hope everybody's doing well out there in the West. It's sweltering and humid here in the mountains.
Sweltering and dry here. So.
Okay. So fire season is upon you guys soon, or let's hope not.
No, that's in early fall. You know, okay. It's dry. Okay. Still a little wet to be a fire season.
Yet. Yeah, but it'll come. Hey, it'll come. Here's why I wanted to talk to you. So I've been reading and talking to people, and you know, inflation, it sounds so vague, but here's what got me thinking. So my daughter wanted to have build a deck in her backyard, right? And so she talked to the builder guy, and the builder guy said, oh no. Mm. He said, the same deck that would have cost you $3,000, say in November, is now going to cost you $11,000. Literally, he said, if I can even get it. I saw that corn is going up, and there's all kinds of effects on that. Gasoline, also. I mean, sure. I remember back in November with my little King Supers points, I could buy gas for about $1 a gallon. It's now $3.15 at the place around the corner. And somebody, you heard some people say, well, inflation, what difference does it make? What's going on and how bad is it?
Well, something's going on, and not all of it is that bad.
Okay. There we go.
But, you know, I mean, here is the thing. In some ways, in an ideal scenario, we would always want a little inflation.
Right.
The Fed is targeting for us to have 2% of inflation on average across all consumer goods in the steady state. What we're seeing right now can be called inflationary upticks. But the question is, how much of it will persist once we get back to some form of steady state? You know, it's there in the data. It's undeniable. If prices keep on across the board increases in the way that they have for a year, we'd be seeing levels of inflation that we've not seen since the early 1980s, when the Fed had to kill essentially inflation by taking out the big interest rate gun.
Wow.
So you know, you annualize the numbers that we're seeing now, and you'd be at about 11% of inflation, which would be absolutely shocking. I don't know whether people on this program share screens, but I could show you some data from the Fed. It's there. You can see it. The question is, it's a bit like with the non-farm payroll that we saw 10 days ago. I mean, that when they exceeded expectations, we were at 580,000 or something like this, which is, the economy is doing what it's supposed to be doing. We're getting back into business. And so in some ways, to see prices go up is a sign of health. It means that people are wanting to spend money. People want to spend money on decks. People want to spend money on petrol. People want to spend money on getting back to normal. So in the short run, in the very short run, we should be seeing prices go up because it's the simple matter of supply and demand. People want more than there is supply for. But the question is, if this persists, then we are in a place that we don't want to be in.
Ask you this too, because and you can explain to me whether I'm looking at this wrong. So I saw today, because there's all this pressure on businesses to raise their hourly wages, and for a whole number of reasons. So I saw Chipotle is raising its hourly wage to $15 an hour. It is also raising its prices 4%. So let's just say I'm a Chipotle and I buy my food at Chipotle. I mean, I would imagine that that's going to more than eat up my. I mean, am I looking at it wrong? It's like, what's the
No, you're looking at it in exactly the right way. And this is how we need to look at it. And this is why inflation is in some ways insidious, because it's always there. Prices always slightly increase. Part of the problem with inflation is too that everything that we do is anchored in nominal terms. You know, people's wage contracts. It doesn't say they're inflation adjusted. It's a fixed amount that people get paid. So what we don't want is these dollar amounts get eroded away. That's precisely the insidious component. My local bagel place, I couldn't believe it, almost doubled. My daughter's favorite PB&J bagel is now an outlandish $6.
Oh my gosh!
Up from about $3.50. Well, and
you indicate that we always have some inflation. Although from, 1870, 1890, they have great deep inflation in the United States, which all of a sudden you bought a house, you couldn't sell it unless you threw cash in. Everything you owned was to own assets was to suffer. And it's a deinflationary economy is maybe the worst of all worlds, but a German 1919 is also.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when inflation, I mean, or you could say Zimbabwe circa 2015, when prices begin to spiral. So the question is this, to the listeners, what's in here? Well, there are a number of things what's so bad about inflation. One is clearly that you lose money. You make less and things cost more. Right. So your purchasing power actually decreases. But the other thing that's really insidious about it is that prices begin to lose meaning. Right. When the spiraling happens, you all of a sudden don't know. In terms of, let's take an extreme example, PB&J bagels versus Dex. You know, we sort of know what the price ratio should be, which one should be more expensive. But when prices begin to accelerate and increase without meaning, that's when people then get confused and the price signals gets lost. So what we're seeing right now can be called inflationary, but we're nowhere near where we're losing sense. It pinches people.
Okay.
The expert is telling you guys that it's transitory. And in some ways, it's a good thing because the prices are telling us people want to spend money. Right.
So from a broad point of view, from a personal point of view, it's kind of sucks.
Yeah, but it really does. It really does. But when we're seeing where the price increases are happening, it's in these very areas where we're expecting them to increase. It's where we couldn't spend, where people, the biggest layoffs have happened in the industries that are now need to hire and that are also hiring at prices that are much above and beyond what we've seen before the crisis, so the restaurant industry and so forth. And
now, how much is the Biden, that this unemployment, the stimulus checks have been? Because you read a lot about that, but my question on that would be too, I mean, I think you're a foolish person if you're like, okay, well, for the past few months, I got $600 a month or something, which really is not going to go far. So I'm going to start turning down all these job offers. I mean, it seems to
me. Oh, no, that's exactly how people operate.
And how do you fix that kind of? Well
no, that's exactly how
people
operate.
I never live on $600 a month.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's $600 more than you made before. Nobody. If you love your job, sure, you wouldn't do it. But if it's a job you hate, and they'll pay you more than to do nothing than to do it. You know, a rational person, I think I'll stay home.
So explain how that.
Sure. Well, a couple of things have happened. And again, the data bears this out. And one of the viewers, Jim, is raising an important point about what's the relationship between increases in the money supply and inflation. I'll come to that in a moment.
Okay.
Historically, there is a link, but not always. So we have to be, I want to caution a little bit. This is one of the big puzzles. That increases in the money supply do not automatically, I guess I'm answering it straight away now so that I can clear that mental cache. What is inflation? Inflation is a general increase in the price level. Is it connected to an increase in the money supply? Historically, yes, this can happen, but not always. And what we strangely have not seen yet is an equivalent increase in price levels relative to how much the money supply has increased. Now, is this the beginning of the dam breaking? Some people might say yes, but I'm very confident that this is quite normal in terms of what we're seeing, people just spending more money. Now, the stimulus checks have something to do with it. People feeling a bit more frisky in terms of saying they're looking at their bank balance and going, hey, I've got money to spend. Of course, absolutely. Is it unwarranted? Should we terribly worry about it for now? Well, let's talk about this in 6 months' time. I am not on air wanting to wager a bet in terms of where this is necessarily headed. I think there are other areas where we ought to be worried in terms of how much corporations have been able to, because of cheap money and so forth, been able to bloat their balance sheet and they're sitting on cash. Yes, the supply chain is absolutely backed up, and we've seen, you'll see it in your, if you've paid, I hesitate to use foul language on the program, sort of, if you're anal enough to be focused on certain types of products, you will see in your local grocery store that not all the shelves have been equally stocked up. There are still massive, in global supply chains, massive backlogs. And so we'll see this in the price levels. We're seeing it in the price levels. Again, short term, it's of historic proportion, because we have not seen a drop in employment, a rebound in employment. And so in some ways, the crazy thing is the fact that the US economy is displaying this short-term fever pitch as far as local prices are concerned is a good thing, because it means the economy is alive and well. Did the Biden plan in some ways get people a little more overexcited than they should be at this point? Of course. And that maybe brings us to the point of the thing that the infrastructure bill and so forth. So I don't know whether you guys want to talk about that.
Well, tell me
what's currently happening.
Well, let's talk about the infrastructure bill, which like,
has nothing to do with infrastructure.
Well, no, it never does. It's all giving to interest groups money from the Democrats, infrastructure groups, and not infrastructure to constituents one way or the other. It seems that it's having problems passing. Is that a good thing?
Well, you know, I think it is. I think it's the system working. We've discussed relative magnitudes in this program. That whole thing at 1.7 trillion is big. It's historically big. It's broken up into different chunks. It has a transportation component to it. It has a sort of a drinking water, electrical grid, high speed broadband component to it. It has a commercial and school building component to it. It has an R&D component to it. And these are all relatively big chunks. The thing I think that one might be worried about is that it's quite difficult to pin down on what it actually does. It sounds good when you sort of talk to, you know, in a pub, it sounds good. Yeah, let's spend $500 billion on the road system. It's roughly the same amount that you could rebuild the entire interstate system with just the that component. But again, there are no such details there.
So it's just
and then all the rest of it is. This is where it gets tricky, and this is where I worry about it, because it's not clear to me how the federal government would want to spend $300 billion on water infrastructure, because that's not in the traditional purview of the federal government. And so that's exactly then to Chuck's point. So where is that money going to go?
It's not going to go in our pockets, but it will go into the politically connected pockets.
Well, there you go. And the same with local schools and so forth. I don't begrudge that part of local infrastructure much needed stimulus. It needs it. It's crumbling. It needs it.
What are going to these worthless ventilation systems they're going to put in? The schools aren't falling down. They're going to put it into...
Of course. Well, look. I mean, the biggest con artistry... Of the narratives of sustainability of late has been to convince us that we should all move away from incandescent light bulbs and this, that, and the other. And I don't even have to be a conservative to say this. I just have to look at the energy flow data that the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, and I could, again, maybe at some other point I could do a share screen and show you some of this stuff. It's phenomenal. Where the US energy system is bleeding itself into unsustainability is really in the transmission of the electrical grid. Nowhere else. Everything else is sort of added on. We don't need to really worry so much about weatherizing our homes as opposed to fixing the electrical grid, the transmission. It's all lost in transmission. It's every time your listeners walk in the neighborhoods and they see these green transformer boxes and they go, that humming, that's wastage right there.
Oh my goodness.
Right? That's electricity being thrown out the window. It doesn't come from the incandescent light bulbs. It doesn't come from running the AC too much. It doesn't come from any of that stuff. But the government wants us to become convinced that they can tell you how to live your life by the type of light bulb that you use.
Right.
And in that sense, the bill is not on target because it claims that it wants to intervene in these levels, but I don't see the details where. And of course, where it feeds into the political economy of the reds and the blues is how it wants to pay for it. It wants to make corporations pay for it. And in some ways, I don't know who the Democrats spoke to in terms of whether anybody thought that this was a good idea how to finance. It's getting the political pushback that it wants in the way that it's being put together. And my mind boggles a little bit how the Biden administration thought that this was something that's politically feasible. So in summary, I want to say to your listeners, yes, of course, you know, infrastructure always works. We've seen it in the 1930s. Great infrastructure programs eventually will pay dividends for a very, very long time. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't invest in some of the things that the administration is suggesting that we should, but certainly not in the way that I don't see how the federal government is going to essentially do with the money that it wants to raise.
Yeah,
that to me is the big red flag. And I think in that sense, the GOP is holding against it because people are seeing this.
Right. Let me throw another conspiracy theory at you, and you can debunk it or support it. So I was at a meeting last night, actually great, and thank you to the Parker Conservatives. They invited us to speak there, and it was a lot of fun. And one of the guys there is involved in the restaurant industry, so he keeps track of food thing, and he was talking about how much the commodity of corn has gone up. Mm-hmm. And it's gone up a huge amount. And he said, one of the things that people don't realize is, you know, all the things that corn is used for. Mm-hmm. And he's saying there is no real reason that corn has gone up. It's a commodity. So he's suggesting that it's being manipulated, essentially. And he said, but one of the things that's going to happen is because a huge amount of corn goes to feed cattle and livestock. And he said, so your meat prices at the grocery store are going to go up massively, which he is suggesting is all part of their, we need to get rid of cow, you know, AOC's quit eating hamburger and cows are destroying the world. And that all of this ties into like your incandescent light bulbs, this whole new Green New Deal reset.
Everything is infused with that.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a big loaded question, and it's an important one because we have, you know, in econ we talk about a whole host of types of goods, and there are certain things that are called merit goods, things that the government thinks you should or shouldn't. It's sort of the paternalistic government that you should, and tobacco, of course, has been for a long time been one of these. Should the government continue supporting tobacco farmers? And in some ways there is reasons, yes, even if the end product isn't necessarily, but at the end of the day we live in a free society, and so we should be able to consume as much red meat as people want. Now should cattle be fed subsidized corn as fodder is an entirely different question. On that one, I should say the poor animals aren't designed, by the way, to digest corn very well. It actually gives them rather nasty bloating and so forth. So I'd much rather prefer, again, the well-fed college professor from the East with European roots, he wants grass-fed beef and is willing to pay a premium for it. Now, in that sense, is cheap meat a human right? I don't think it is. Should prices be reflecting proper market conditions? Absolutely. And in some ways, certain aspects of the agro business in the United States has been benefiting from certain types of subsidies that are distortionary.
Okay.
Sandra is saying the government is pushing us into electric cars. I can tell you that it's, I'm happy to announce with great pride on this program that I'm having my naturalization ceremony next week.
Oh.
I'm switching sides. I'm becoming one of yours.
Oh, my goodness, thank you.
Next week. And so when I look to Europe, where the government is actually making people buy electric cars and is forbidding, I hope that day never comes in America. Where if I want the petrol engine on my car, I can have it, even if it means that I may have to pay a little more for it. You know, all of that. Yes, as another viewer says, is thank you, Sandra. Yes, it's, to me, it's a great privilege. I think the U.S. still is the greatest nation on this planet. It's the best enlightenment experiment that we've ever seen. But we need to make sure that it stays healthy. And in that sense, big government telling you what to do cannot be the way.
Right. Well, and what about, as Charlene says, you've got now these new oligarchical people, Amazon, AI, solar, Google, YouTube, all of these people who also have a vested interest in pushing certain things.
Oh, of course. And they have the platforms. They own the platforms. Right. And are we looking over their shoulders? And to me, that's the big scam. That this is what, you know, all of those people who have you focused on the Green New Deal and all of that stuff. In principles, we get it. Look, The New Deal was in many ways good, but it inserted government in ways that we're still feeling. It started messing with the finance industry. It started doing lots of things. And we still are not paying enough attention to regulation.
What did the New Deal do that was so great? I missed that part.
Well, as a fellow homeowner, I would say it made housing plentiful and affordable to most people.
A very small portion of allowing federal mortgages and all that. They also probably oversaturated the market and made it often, it's similar to the mortgage crisis we had before the United States, where all of a sudden they were shoving out mortgages to all the people who couldn't pay for it. So you kind of go, for every good deed they do, they do just as many bad deeds.
Well, absolutely. And this is a very tenable position. But this is why we must examine what government does so closely.
Let me ask you this question. It's my favorite question in life. Did Smoot Hawley help cause the exacerbate the depression of 1929, 1930?
The word on the street is yes.
I know the word on the street. and the word is in the street is because it was passed by overwhelmingly Republican majority. So the Democrats have been able to point out to it for now 80 years that it causes a massive amount of depression in the United States when it had no such effect. If it had any effect, then it would have gotten rid of. I mean, Roosevelt was in by 1933. If he thought Smoot Hawley was this awful bill, they could have corrected it, and they never did. And in fact, it wouldn't be to the 1940s that any of the trade agreements were. So if it's causing all this erroneous effect and bad effect, why didn't the wonderful New Dealers do anything about it? The reason it had a slightly positive effect on the American economy, and they didn't want to disturb that.
Well, that's a fair point. That is a fair point. Plus, they had their eye on some other things. They thought it's the new broom theory. They always thought that, let these bygones, why fight these battles when we can dazzle people with some fantastic new blinky things.
These are the kinds of things that Chuck thinks about and asks me randomly also. So
you're a lucky woman. These are
I'm like, is that a joke? Smoot Hawley, who has a name? Hey, David, we've run out of time. You've been great. We're going to have you on regularly.
We're about to figure out how we can share some of those graphs you're talking about. That sounds great.
Right. So thank you for your time, because we'll have you on. We'll have to see what is it that we need to be worried about. But we didn't want to go negative today. So
no, all is well. And for now, but we need to watch them like a hawk. We really do. And I do think I would want to have a slightly longer conversations about these issues where government is the cause of many problems. And
We'll book you for a whole show.
Why don't you get your naturalization papers, register as Republican, because there's not too many other people who are doing that with naturalization.
Yes, and yes, absolutely. And then maybe run for governor in Virginia.
Okay. All right, congratulations to you. Thank you for your time. All right.
Thank you.
See, we have the best guest. She's trying to spread. Thank you. Yeah, wait, Chuck is leaving. Chuck, once again, oh, he's got a golf tournament, guys. Here's the truth. He doesn't have the golf tournament. He has a
cocktail hour before the tournament tomorrow.
Hey, thank you, everybody. Thank you to David. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to TJ back at BBS headquarters. Everyone on Zoom, we so appreciate you. Check our show out. We're back on YouTube, so I'll be posting this here in a little bit at chuckandjulie.com. You can get everything. And we will see you all on Party Friday.